entitled Instructions for Civilized Human Beings. Text numbers 54 through 57 or something. On his path of ascent, the progressive living entity enters the different worlds of fire, the sun, the day, the end of the day, the bright fortnight, the full moon, and the passing of the sun in the north, along with their presiding demigods. When he enters Brahmaloka, he enjoys life for many millions of years, and finally, his material designation comes to an end. He then comes to a subtle designation, from which he attains the causal designation, witnessing all previous states. Upon the annihilation of this causal state, he attains his pure state, in which he identifies with the super soul. In this way, the living entity becomes transcendental. So this is a description of the ascent of the conditioned living entity towards liberation. Gradually, step by step, he is relinquishing his material coverings and entering into his pure state as spirit soul. So, this is a description of his passing through the different levels of the material world, the different coverings of the material world, and gradually annihilating each layer of covering. Stripped, as it were, just like you strip the peel off of a banana or off of, what's a better example? Something that has many layers, you strip off the different layers.
Onion.
Onion, okay. Onion. So here the same description is given. There's no purport to this verse, so we'll read text number 55. Devayanam idam prahur bhutva bhutvanu purvasaha atma yajju yajju upashan upashan at upashantatma yatmasto na nivartate. This gradual process of elevation for self-realization is meant for those who are truly aware of the absolute truth. So, manushyanam sahasreshu kaschid yatati siddhaye yatatamapi siddhanam kaschin veti maam tatataha. Pramanda brahmite kona bhagyavan jeev. We are in a portion of the spiritual world known as Ekapad Vibhuti, or one quarter of the creation of God. There are innumerable living entities here. They are inhabiting within 8,400,000 species unlimited numbers of bodies. And they're engaged in the business of eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Repeatedly, they meet with frustration. They are constantly pricked by the trishul of Durga Devi, the big fork that she has, the trident. And each one of the spears of that trident represents adi-daivik, adi-bhautik, and adi-atmik klesha, respectively. miseries caused by nature, miseries caused by other living beings, and miseries caused by the infirmity of my own body. Somehow or other, the conditioned soul is so doggedly obstinate. You will never see any more obstinacy greater than a dog, especially when the dog is interested in sex enjoyment. That's samadhi. You can't meditate on anything else. You see in Vrindavan, if you ever go to Vrindavan, you see the mangiest, most wretched-looking dogs in the universe. I don't know why, or I do know why, but it still is wonderful to see. The dogs are relatively skinny. They are covered with diseases. They are obviously constantly hungry. Nevertheless, when a bitch is in heat, 5 or 10 dogs will gather and try to engage in sex with her, and one dog may be victorious, and the other dogs will simply bite at that dog and growl at that dog where he's trying to enjoy. But he's so obstinate that dog-like obstinacy. And we're so obstinate that despite being oppressed in so many ways in this material world, we persist lifetime after lifetime trying to enjoy with the hope that maybe my next body will be the payoff, will be the cash jackpot, will be nirvana in the material world, will be everything I was always promised, but it never happens. It hasn't happened in the past. It's not happening in the present, and it won't happen in the future because the material world is dukkhalam ashashvatam. That's the way it's made. Place of misery. You only stay here temporarily and then you come back again. So, out of many, many millions and billions of living entities, when one is sufficiently experienced, he will take an interest in spiritual life and try to achieve perfection beyond eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. It will occur to him like a flash of brilliance that there may be something else besides animal activities, to wit, self-realization. When that conditioned soul endeavors in that way, again, it is a long process. We are covered with so many material desires, and we bring those material desires in our pursuit of spiritual knowledge until we are purified of those material desires. Nyavilasita shunyam jnana karmani anavritam. Then we cannot practice anukul bhakti, uttam bhakti. So, there are many obstacles on the path of spiritual life, including sayujya mukti, or the desire to merge into the existence of the Lord, including acquiring great power through mystic siddhis, including acquiring prestige, many followers and influence. There are so many things that are offered just to see whether you want the spiritual life or you want material life. What do you really want? Not superficially, but are you prepared to make the ultimate sacrifice, sarva dharman paritya jamami kam sharanam braja aham tvam sarva pape vyo mokshi shami mashucha. Are you ready to give up everything and surrender to Krishna fully? What come what may, in happiness and in distress, in profit and loss, in victory and defeat. Are you prepared to be 100% dependent upon the mercy of the Lord and accept everything as His blessings? That is the qualification required. So, the process of elevation for self-realization is meant for those who are truly aware of the Absolute Truth or who are truly interested to know the Absolute Truth. After repeated birth on this path, which is known as Devayana, one attains these consecutive stages. One who is completely free from all material desires, being situated in the self, need not traverse the path of repeated birth and death. So, one can attempt to acquire spiritual knowledge by his own prowess. One can endeavor to extend his senses and mind. Although we know Ataha Sri Krishna Namadi Navaved Graya Mindriyai Sevan Mukhehi Jivado Swayameva Skuratyada. Although we know that the Absolute Truth is beyond the limit of anybody's mundane senses, nevertheless one can make progress up to the level of Brahman if he is very determined. Spiritual life requires determination in any event. But in order to achieve by your own efforts without any help from Krishna, you require a lot of determination. And one can rise up. But unless one gets the mercy of a pure devotee of the Lord, one cannot become free from all material desires. And if one gets the association of a pure devotee of the Lord, and if one takes the instructions of that pure devotee as his life and soul, and tries his best to mold his life along those guidelines, then he can make very rapid progress. As is stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Yavanartha Udapane Sarvata Samprutodike. Tavan Sarveshu Vedeshu Brahmanasya Vijanata. Someone who has got the association of a pure devotee, he has achieved the benefit of going through all the different preliminary processes of elevation. There is no need for repeated birth and death. Bhavanam Janmanam Ante. It takes many, many lifetimes to ascend by the process of jnana. But one can achieve perfection in jnana and in bhakti and in all the processes by surrendering to Krishna's representative, who is Sarvadeva, my own guru. He is the sum total of, greater than the sum total of all the demigods. He is Krishna's representative, and that is explained further in the next verse. Ya ite pitra devanam ayane veda nirmite shastrena chakshusa veda janasto pima muyati. Even though situated in a material body, one who is fully aware of the paths known as pitrayana and devayana, and who thus opens his eyes in terms of Vedic knowledge, is never bewildered in this material world. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Acharyavan Purusho Veda, One was guided by the bona fide spiritual master knows everything as stated in the Vedas, which set forth the standard of infallible knowledge, as recommended in Bhagavad Gita, Acharyopasanam. One must try to approach the Acharya for real knowledge. Tad vigyanartham sa gurumeva vigacchet. One must approach the Acharya, for then one will receive perfect knowledge. When guided by the spiritual master, one attains the ultimate goal of life. So, transcendental knowledge is descending as avaroha panta. This is known as the path of descending knowledge. And Lord Krishna comes down through disciplic succession, evam parampara tratam imam darshayo vidu. So, this is not a difficult thing to understand. Knowledge is descending. Knowledge is perfect knowledge beyond the defects of conditioned souls. There are four defects, and perfect knowledge, which is above those defects, must come from outside the material world. So it descends from the absolute world, from Krishna. Krishna is the original guru. He is giving us perfect knowledge, and it is coming down. So, this is very easy to understand. The principle. How that knowledge descends and how do we receive it, that takes a lot of careful thought. It takes thorough knowledge of the scriptures. There are four things that are inconceivable, and one of those is Guru Tattva. So it is not an easy subject, but we should try to demystify it. We should try to understand, because we are being asked to make a very deep commitment to spiritual life, which will affect our whole life, which will, practically speaking, if we make this commitment, it will be a 180-degree turn from what we have been instructed by our parents, by our teachers, by society. It is something very deep and something that which needs great discussion and consideration. So this word acharya is an interesting word. As you know, Sanskrit is a language where one word can have 10 different meanings. The same word applied in a different place with different antecedents and different contexts, it can have a totally different meaning, the same word. So acharya also has different meanings, and I would like to take the trouble to finish the lecture by reading a letter that is relevant. It's a letter that was written on August 7th, 1978. Now, the letter itself contains a number of points, and they are the letter was written by a person, albeit an erudite person, but nevertheless, it is his letter, and it's a philosophical matter. But there are a lot of things here that we should all consider. It was written by Pradumya Das Adhikari to Satsarup Maharaj, who was one of the members of the governing body Kedar Commission and also was giving disciples initiation. Dear Satsarup Maharaj, please accept my most humble obeisances. Maharaj, I am writing you this letter with great anxiety in my heart and after days and days and long nights of thought and careful consideration. Again, Pradyumna was Prabhupada's Sanskrit assistant, means he helped him, he traveled with him and helped him in publishing the Bhagavatam in writing. Of course, Prabhupada wrote everything, but Pradyumna helped with the word meanings, etc. And he was one of the early disciples of Srila Prabhupada. And I have been staying in Vrindavan for some time and have not visited any other center recently except Delhi. Therefore, my information I have about what is happening at our other centers comes only from devotees visiting here. Occasional letters, newsletters, and our society's magazine and other publications. But the news I hear from these sources is very alarming, and therefore I'm writing you in some anxiety. The matter concerns the God brothers who were selected by Srila Prabhupada to accept disciples. At the time of Srila Prabhupada's disappearance, it was most clearly understood by all of us present that Srila Prabhupada made no successor. Everyone admitted that fact and understood it clearly. Instead, the GBC was to jointly manage all affairs of ISKCON, just as had been the case previously. This was the same solution as desired by Om Vishnupad Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who also had not made any successor, although his wishes were not followed. So, that history you all know about. Bhakti Siddhanta, as his last wish, said, let you all conduct the activities of the mission under the auspices of the GBC. So the members of the Gaudiya Math, including many of the people that we're meeting today, or some of them, they did form a GBC for some time. They had some disagreements, and then they disbanded the GBC and elected one Acharya. His name was Ananta Vasudeva. He was a great scholar. He was a brahmachari and very, very senior man. Subsequently, he had spiritual difficulty, ran off to Vrindavan, stole the deity's money and jewels, and lived for some time with a woman in Vrindavan. History. So they broke up subsequently into many, many different factions because they did not follow the instructions of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, and therefore Srila Prabhupada called them asara, or useless. Then in 1970, Srila Prabhupada established his own GBC. So during his lifetime, he said, I'm also one of the members of the GBC. And he gave great importance to the governing body commission as the ultimate managing authority. In addition to the GBC management, Srila Prabhupada also selected 11 somewhat advanced disciples to grant initiation to newcomers. However, it was never mentioned at any time by His Divine Grace that these 11 were to be known as Acharyas. He simply instructed that they may now accept disciples. Otherwise, as it was understood and practiced at that time, there was no special position given to these 11, either in the society as a whole or in relation to their godbrothers. Management would depend on the joint GBC, and among godbrothers and godsisters, all are on the same level, with the exception of some special regard and respect shown to older, senior disciples by these God brothers and God sisters who are junior. Now, at present, I understand that the 11 gurus are all, number one, adopting the title of Acharya. Two, sitting on high vyasasanas in front of Srila Prabhupada's vyasasan and their own God brothers, accepting worship and great respect normally reserved for a guru from the rest of their God brothers. And that four, the previous GBC zones have all been given by mutual agreement or by invitation among the different acharyas. For some of you who don't know, this was known as the Zonal Acharya Days. First of all, the word acharya may be taken in three senses. Etymologically, the word means one who practices. One who practices what he preaches. This is the general meaning and may be used in relation to any pure devotee. Just as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Amaragyai Guru Hoi Pare Desh. Jare Deko Tare Kaho Krishna Upadesh. It is easy to become a guru or a teacher. You simply repeat the message of scripture. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Apani Achari Bhakti Sikayam Sabari. I come to act as an acharya of devotional service by practicing myself. To any pure devotee, period. In other words, he's emphasizing any pure devotee can be called acharya as long as he practices what he preaches. The word also means one who grants initiation to disciples. This is specifically indicating one who is a guru. Anyone who grants initiation or is a guru may be called as acharyadev, etc., by his disciples only. Whoever has accepted him as guru must give all respects to him in every way, but this does not apply to those who are not his disciples. Thirdly, the word acharya indicates the spiritual head of an institution or pitha. This meaning is very specific. It does not mean just anyone. It means only one who has been specifically declared by the previous acharya to be his successor above all others to the seat of the spiritual institution which he heads. He alone, among all of his God brothers, is given a raised seat and special honor. No other God brother may receive such respect, and he is the authority in all spiritual and material matters. This is the strict tradition in all of the Gaudiya Sampradayas. Now, Srila Prabhupada, it is clear, did not appoint any such successor because no one of his disciples at present is advanced to the level of Krishna consciousness necessary to assume such a position. Nor did Srila Prabhupada make 11 such acharyas. This was never mentioned by him. They were only given permission to make disciples, and the GBC was to jointly manage materially and spiritually. There was never any distinctions made by Srila Prabhupada between material management and spiritual management. Both are the concern of the GBC. The 11 gurus may be known as acharyas only in the second case of their word to their disciples as mantra-giving gurus, not in the third sense as the spiritual successors of Srila Prabhupada. That was never meant to be by his divine grace. Secondly, among God brothers, it is not correct that any one of them sit above the others, especially in the presence of Gurudev. If Gurudev is not present, sometimes the sannyasi God brothers may be given an asana, but that asana does not mean a huge, gigantic seat. It simply means a square piece of cloth or wool, not more than 1/8 inch or 1/4 inch thick. This is asana. If any one God brother or many God brothers sit above the others, it is not at all proper. But at that time, the zonal acharyas had their seat, and whenever they came into the temple, they sat on their seat. and there would be another seat for visiting acharyas. But they had their seat, and this was in the temple, and he's objecting to this. Sometimes in an assembly there may be a raised platform or table on which the sannyasi speakers sit, but all sannyasi godbrothers must be invited to sit in an equal place on the speaker's platform. Sometimes a grihastha or brahmachari godbrother may also be invited to sit there and higher. It is the symptom of a Vaishnava to be extremely humble. He must always be extremely careful of putting himself in a position where he may become conceited. A guru may take a higher seat than his disciple, that is bona fide, but he cannot illegally take a higher seat than his godbrothers. The relation between the guru and his godbrothers and a guru and his disciples is entirely different. He should not sit higher than godbrothers other than if he is a sannyasi on a thin cloth, as already mentioned, if offered by his godbrothers, or accept respect from them without offering respect in return. This is the general niti, or etiquette. Besides this, there are among godbrothers some further rules to be observed between those who are senior and those who are junior. Seniority is calculated according to the time of receiving first or Harinam initiation or by his ability to perform bhajanam. Now there may be some discrepancy there. I've heard that seniority is calculated on the basis of first initiation, or in the cases of sannyas, it is taken from the time of sannyas initiation. If one godbrother has disciples, the guru puja and vyasa puja of that godbrother should be conducted in a separate place or his private room, not in front of all his godbrothers. In an assembly of Vaishnavas, all sit on the same level together, godbrothers along with their sishyas. No one is permitted to accept separate respect from disciples in any gathering of other godbrothers. In Gaudiya Math, the vyasa puja of one godbrother who has disciples is usually performed in the following manner. The guru takes his raised seat in his private place and invites all his godbrothers to the function also. If his godbrothers come to offer him some flowers, that godbrother guru immediately first worships his other godbrothers and offers them garland, chandan, etc. And in some cases presents cloth, umbrella, etc. They honor each other and are seated properly. Then that guru's disciples may come forward and offer their worship. I saw this in 1972 when I first went to Vrindavan. I went to the Vyasa Puja of Madhav Maharaj. He invited Guru Das and myself. And indeed, he did accept worship, but all of his godbrothers sat in chairs on the same level as him. He sat, and they went through a little game. They had to force him to sit on the Vyasasan when it came time to Guru Puja, and they all gathered round and pushed him forward, and then he sat down, and then there were chairs for all the godbrothers to sit. So I, in my birthday in Bombay, last year, my godbrothers came, and they were all seated on a nice asana chair, and then I wished garland each one of them and begged their forgiveness and blessings. That is the proper way. They honor each other and are seated properly, then the guru's disciples may come forward and offer their worship. This is the system being observed. Incidentally, the words Om Vishnu Pad Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur were found in the English book Sri Chaitanya's teachings regarding the sitting above everyone else are from a speech delivered in response to the offerings of his disciples on the occasion of his Vyas Puja. Those words are in relation to his disciples, not to his godbrothers, of which there weren't any. The niti in regard to godbrothers is completely different from that to disciples. So There are two considerations, relative consideration and absolute consideration. Although the disciples have read all this material, they're fully conversant in the science of guru-disciple relationship, etc. Still, they know that, as was stated, tad vijñānārtham sa guru meva vigacchet, one must approach and accept the bona fide guru, and one must worship him as Krishna's representative. So, they, keeping their clear intelligence, they offer worship to their spiritual master, knowing that it will help them to advance in devotional service, and knowing that the God brothers have a relative consideration. A God brother can correct his God brother, a God brother can slap him on the face, as it were, or when he gets out of line, and the disciples know this. And this is a check and balance so that someone does not deviate. And so the disciples are protected, and they're happy that they are protected, that they're offering their worship to Krishna through the spiritual master, and that they are protected by the God brothers of the spiritual master, in this case by the GBC body, or more specifically by this GBC body. God brothers also can deal intimately with the spiritual master. One who is actually guru may make disciples anywhere. Anyway, this is in relationship to zonal acharyism. If one sets up his personal seat as acharya in different temples, how can it be removed? Who else can sit in it? Then does that temple belong to that guru, or does it belong to the GBC? That means the power or control is switched from joint GBC to the 11 gurus. Srila Prabhupada never intended this arrangement. Moreover, in the future, in accordance with his divine gracious instructions, other qualified God brothers may also become gurus. Where will they go? In Srila Prabhupada's temples, no raised seat should be given to any but Srila Prabhupada. All God brothers should sit on the same level. One exception may be in the case of one speaking from the Shastras, like Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, Chaitanya Charitamrita. But that seat is very special. It's not for the reader. It is meant for the book. After paying obeisances to that seat, he who is to read may, after taking permission from his senior godbrothers and sannyasis, ascend to read from Bhagavatam. After finishing, he may again pay his obeisances. Much of the knowledge written here is not found in Shastra, but is called Sistachar, that which has been taught by the conduct of the past guru parampara. It has not been specifically mentioned in any Shastra, but still it is accepted as authoritative because of being seen to be the conduct of previous acharyas and their disciples. Anyway, that's more or less the important part of the letter. So here, Prabhupada is stressing this point that we have to follow this guru parampara system, and it must be done. Abhigacchet means there's no alternative. It has to be done. And there is a conception of absolute. People are very disturbed by the fact that Catholics, many people around the world, are disturbed by the infallibility of the Pope. This concept is a big debate in America, in Poland, in many places. Some people accept it, more sentimental people just accept, okay, the Pope is guided by God and that's the end of it. But more philosophically inclined people, they haven't got any way to deal with that. And they quote examples of popes in the past who were totally corrupt. But we have a much more advanced understanding of this idea. It is possible for us to understand that the spiritual master is Krishna's representative, and he can be right even when he is wrong. Now, that's an interesting statement, but when he is really wrong, then he will be corrected by his peers and by his seniors. But those are his disciples. They have to maintain some kind of reverential attitude towards their spiritual master. And there's utility in that to help them ultimately see the infallibility of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Without training, one can never come to any stage of realization. You may be born a brahmana, but you will not be a brahmana unless you are properly trained as a brahmana. You may be elected as a sannyasi or a guru or whatever it is, but until you're properly trained. So a disciple also, this training is good for him so that he can develop love for Krishna and thus rise through all these different states of purification. Our process is expedient. Our process can be, you can achieve perfection within one lifetime or in a very short period of time. But it is also not without Shruti, Smriti, Purana, Pancharatra. It is Bhakti and Vedanta. And we should never be put to sleep in that we don't examine and try to understand this process very clearly. So, I'll stop there. Are there any questions or comments? Yes.
Is there any specific reason for bringing out this letter?
I liked it. Prabhupada talks about acharya, so Pradyumna clarifies there are three meanings to the word acharya. If you take it on face value, acharyavan purusho veda, one who is guided by the bona fide spiritual master. Now, the only infallible, absolutely infallible acharya that we are accepting at the moment is Srila Prabhupada, our founder acharya. Although, in a lesser way, the disciple should have a reverential attitude of respect towards his spiritual master, but we only become mantra-giving gurus because we follow the GBC and we follow Srila Prabhupada. He is the primary acharya in ISKCON, so I wanted to make that distinction because this word acharya comes up all the time. Any other questions? Rantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.